All right, welcome to your personalized deep dive. You know, you shared those excerpts from the lecture on Old Testament history, specifically Jacob's blessings and the story of Joseph. And now, well, now we get to really dig in.
It's like we're going back in time to early Israel.
I like that, back in time.
We're talking about prophetic pronouncements, a bit of, you know, family drama, and a story that really does read like almost like an ancient thriller.
Right, all rolled into one.
And what I find really fascinating is how, you know, these blessings, they actually act as a blueprint for the future of Israel. Like each son's destiny is kind of woven into this bigger narrative of the nation's rise.
Okay. Yeah. I was really intrigued by how the lecture compared, you know, these blessings to pronouncements from Noah and Isaac.
Yeah.
It seems like there's a real like weightiness to these words, a lot more than, you know, just like casual good wishes from a father.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You hit the nail on the head. They're not just kind of hoping for good things to happen to their sons. It's more like, think of it as divinely inspired pronouncements, you know, sort of a sneak peek into the future of each tribe.
Oh, okay. So like a glimpse into the future.
Yeah, exactly. And the lecture draws a really interesting parallel to prophetic pronouncements, suggesting that they carry a similar kind of weight and significance.
Wow, that's okay. So let's get into the specifics, I guess. I mean, the blessing on Judah, like that really jumped out at me. It's got,
oh, yeah,
talk about dramatic foreshadowing.
Definitely.
Lions and scepters, even the word Shiloh, you know, it's like getting this like early glimpse into the rise of kings in Israel.
The imagery, it's incredibly potent. When you think about the lion, it immediately evokes strength and leadership, and the scepter, that's like a classic symbol, you know, of royal authority. And this is actually the first time in the Bible that a kingly lineage is explicitly mentioned. So it really sets the stage for the rise of, well, King David centuries later, and ultimately, you know, points towards the Messiah.
Okay, yeah, that's amazing. And what about that word Shiloh? I mean, the lecture mentioned there's a debate about its meaning, right?
Oh, absolutely. There is some scholars, they interpret it as a place.
Okay.
While others see it as a messianic title.
Okay.
But either way, it's pointing towards, you know, a future ruler, a figure who holds immense importance.
A future ruler, bro.
Yeah. And it ties in really beautifully, I think, with Ezekiel's prophecy, where you see the scepter of Judah appearing again, this time connected to both judgment and restoration.
It sounds like this scepter of Judah, I mean, that's a really significant concept. It appears in Jacob's blessing and then again in Ezekiel's prophecy, like centuries apart.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it emphasizes, you know, the enduring nature of the Davidic dynasty, that it's not just important for the immediate future, but throughout Israel's history.
Right. You know, it speaks to a continuity of leadership, a promise that runs through generations.
Okay, so we've got Judah, who's being set up for this leadership role. But now let's switch gears a little bit and talk about Joseph. I mean, his story is like something out of, you know, like an ancient adventure novel. We've got betrayal, slavery, prison, and then, you know, ultimately this like meteoric rise to power in Egypt.
I know. The Joseph narrative is truly, it's one of the most captivating in the whole Old Testament, full of these crazy twists and turns, you know, and dramatic irony, but ultimately a message of resilience and redemption.
Mm. Now, the lecture mentioned this idea of Joseph's story having like a typological significance,
yeah,
you know, especially when it's compared to Christ's life. But there was also this caution against, you know, reading it as like a strict allegory. Can you unpack that a little bit for us? Right. So it's really important to be nuanced here, I think. You know, the scholar N.H. Ritterbose, who the lecture cites, he reminds us that while there are these really undeniable parallels between Joseph's experiences and Jesus's life, you know, the betrayal, suffering, and then ultimately the exaltation and forgiveness, we shouldn't force a one-to-one allegorical reading.
Okay.
It's more about recognizing, I think, the broader themes of, you know, humiliation followed by exaltation, that you see these themes that echo throughout scripture and they culminate in Christ.
So these themes kind of play out in different ways,
yeah,
throughout history.
Yeah.
But Joseph's story isn't meant to be like a literal prefigurement of Jesus's life.
Right, exactly. Joseph's story, it stands on its own as this powerful testament to God's faithfulness, mm-hmm, and his ability to bring good out of even the most, you know, difficult circumstances. And it's a story that I think just resonates so deeply with human experience, and it offers a powerful glimpse into God's character and his redemptive purposes.
Okay. And let's not forget about the backdrop of all this, you know, the family dynamics. Mm-hmm. I mean,
right,
that rivalry between between Leah and Rachel's children, that's still simmering, you know, and it seems like, you know, selling Joseph into slavery was just the tip of the iceberg.
This is where things get really intriguing, I think, because you have to remember, this is the family through whom God is choosing to work out his plan of salvation.
Right.
And yet, you know, you've got this family that's riddled with jealousy and betrayal and just dysfunctional relationships.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, right, about how
it does.
About how God might work.
It challenges our assumptions for sure.
Yeah, I remember being like completely shocked when I first, you know, read about Judah and Tamar. Talk about an unexpected turn of events.
I know, right?
You know, it's not exactly the kind of behavior you would expect from, you know, the ancestor of the Messiah.
Yeah. Well, that's right. It's definitely a jarring episode and one that raises all sorts of questions, you know, about morality and God's providence.
Yeah.
But I think the lecture emphasizes that God works through flawed individuals, you know, and complex situations.
It seems like I'm starting to see a theme here. Like God using the unexpected, you know, even what we might see as messy or even wrong, you know, to bring about his purposes.
I think that's a key takeaway, yeah. And in this particular case, it's crucial to note that Perez, who was a child born from this unconventional union, you know, he actually becomes part of the lineage of Jesus.
Really?
Yeah. So even from this episode, that seems, you know, kind of out of place. You see God weaving his plan.
Okay. So let me make sure I'm following this. So Joseph, you know, while he's a pivotal figure, he's not the one who directly carries the promise forward.
Yeah.
It's actually Judah, despite his flaws, who remains the chosen line. It's fascinating how God kind of weaves this intricate tapestry, right? Using each individual and their choices, even their mistakes, to fulfill his plan.
It really highlights, I think, how God's ways are not our ways.
Uh-huh.
He sees the bigger picture. You know, he's playing the long game and he uses all things, the good, the bad, the unexpected, to bring about his ultimate purposes.
This deep dive is already overflowing with insights. You know, we've explored Jacob's prophetic blessings. We've talked about the ups and downs of Joseph's journey and these complex family dynamics that shaped the future of Israel. But I'm curious, like, what about the other brothers? Where do they fit in all of this?
That's a great question. And the lecture excerpts, they really focused primarily on Judah and Joseph.
Right.
But the other brothers also have, you know, these crucial roles to play in this unfolding drama of Israel's formation.
So we're left with a bit of a cliffhanger, I guess.
Maybe just a little.
What happens to the rest of Jacob's sons? How do their stories kind of intertwine with the bigger picture of God's plan?
Well, I guess we'll have to wait for part two to uncover those mysteries.
I guess so.
Okay, so we left off with this pretty big question, right? Like, what about the other brothers? I mean, their stories might not be as like, you know, dramatic as Joseph's, but
yeah.
I have a feeling like they're just as important for understanding how this whole family ended up shaping a nation.
Oh, I totally agree. I think of it like a tapestry. You know,
okay.
Judah and Joseph, they might be these really prominent threads, but all the other brothers, they contribute to like the richness and the complexity of the overall design.
Yeah. What really strikes me is how the lecture emphasizes the family aspect of all this. You know,
almost.
It's not just about individuals. It's about how their relationships, their dynamic, like all of it plays into God's bigger plan.
Yeah.
That's a key insight, I think, for sure, because this isn't just like an ancient history lesson. It's a story about family.
Yeah.
It's about these messy, complicated relationships that end up shaping us all. We see the jealousy, the favoritism, the long-lasting impact of those early hurts and rivalries. It's something that most of us can relate to even thousands of years later.
It's like, you know, that saying, the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Mm,
you know,
yeah.
we might not be selling our siblings into slavery.
Right, exactly.
But, you know, those same dynamics of competition and hurt feelings, they still play out in families today.
Oh, absolutely. And what's so encouraging, I think, is that even amidst all this dysfunction, you see God at work. He's not deterred by our brokenness. In fact, I think he uses it. He takes those tangled threads and he weaves them into this tapestry of redemption.
Yeah, that's a really powerful image. You know, God taking our mess and making something beautiful out of it. I mean, it makes me wonder how he might be doing that in my own family, you know, even in those relationships that feel strained or difficult.
It's a great question to ponder, I think. You know, maybe those challenging relationships are actually opportunities.
Yeah.
Opportunities for growth, for forgiveness, for practicing grace in a way that we never even thought possible.
Okay, so let's rewind for a second and go back to that really pivotal scene where Joseph's brothers decide to sell him into slavery. I mean, it's such a stark example of how deeply rooted those sibling rivalries can be.
It's a heartbreaking moment, and it shows how quickly, you know, jealousy and resentment can escalate into something that's truly destructive. But even in that really dark moment, you see these glimmers of God's grace breaking through.
Talking about Reuben, right?
Yeah, exactly.
He tries to protect Joseph, even though the others are like actively plotting against him.
That's right. And Reuben's actions, I think, reveal that even in a deeply, you know, dysfunctional family, there can still be love, loyalty, and a desire to protect. It reminds us that people are complex. You know, they're capable of both great cruelty and great compassion.
Yeah. And then there's Judah. He's the one who ultimately suggests selling Joseph into slavery instead of killing him. I mean, it's still a terrible act, but it's a slightly less terrible act, right?
It's a fascinating shift in Judah's character, I think, because in that moment, he chooses a path that while it's still wrong, it at least spares Joseph's life.
Right.
And it hints at, I think, a capacity for empathy, maybe even a touch of remorse.
It's like even in the midst of their sin,
yeah,
God is prompting them towards a slightly better choice, a choice that ultimately allows his plan to unfold.
Precisely. Yeah. It's a reminder that God can work through anything, even our mistakes, our bad decisions, to bring about his purposes.
Speaking of bad decisions, I mean, let's talk about Judah and Tamar. I was floored when I first read that story.
It's pretty wild.
I mean, it's so unexpected, especially considering that Judah is the one who, you know, receives the blessing of leadership, the promise of a royal lineage.
It's a jarring juxtaposition, isn't it? You would expect the ancestor of the Messiah to be, well, a little bit more righteous.
Yeah, right. But instead we see him making these seriously like questionable choices. And yet from that very situation, God brings forth Perez, who becomes part of Jesus's lineage. I mean, it's mind-boggling.
I think it's a powerful reminder that God's ways are not our ways.
Right.
He doesn't operate according to our limited understanding of morality or our expectations of how things should be.
It's like he's saying, like, don't put me in a box. You know, I can use anyone, even those who mess up royally to accomplish my purposes.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it, I think, because the story it challenges us to let go of our preconceived notions and to embrace those surprising, often unconventional ways that God works.
This whole deep dive is really making me rethink how I view God's sovereignty. You know,
yeah,
it's not just about him like controlling every little detail. It's about him working through these complexities of human choices, both good and bad, to achieve his ultimate goal.
That's a really profound insight, I think, because it's about trusting that even when things seem messy or unfair, even when we make mistakes, God is still in control. He's still weaving his plan, and nothing can thwart his purposes.
Okay, I need to circle back to Joseph for a minute. We talked about how his story kind of prefigures certain aspects of Christ's experience, but it's also important to remember that he's not the one who directly carries the promise forward.
Right.
It's Judah.
That's Joseph's role is crucial, but it's ultimately through Judah's lineage that the Messiah will come. And it reminds us that God's plan, it isn't always linear or predictable. There are twists and turns and unexpected detours, and sometimes it seems like the wrong person is in the spotlight.
It makes you think about how we often get caught up in our own ambitions, our own ideas of success, but God might have a completely different plan, one that unfolds in ways that we could never imagine.
Exactly. And I think Joseph's story teaches us to surrender our own agendas,
mm-hmm,
and to trust in God's timing and his wisdom. He might lead us down paths that we wouldn't choose for ourselves.
Right.
But ultimately he knows what's best.
What stands out to you about Joseph's character? Like what makes him such a compelling figure even thousands of years later?
I think for me, it's his resilience. Even in the face of of just unimaginable hardship, the betrayal, the enslavement, the false imprisonment, he never loses sight of his faith in God. He maintains his integrity, his hope, even when it seems like all is lost.
Yeah, he doesn't become bitter or cynical. He doesn't let his circumstances define him.
Right.
He chooses to trust God even in the darkest of times.
That's such a powerful lesson for all of us, I think. Yeah. You know, we might face challenges, setbacks, even betrayals in our own lives, but Joseph's example, it reminds us that we can choose to respond with faith, with resilience, and ultimately with forgiveness.
It's a testament to the transformative power of hope, even in the midst of suffering. It's a reminder that we can choose to see God's hand at work even in the most difficult situation.
Yeah, and that's what makes, I think, Joseph's story so timeless and so relevant. It speaks to, I think, those deepest longings of the human heart for justice, for redemption, for a hope that transcends our present circumstances.
Okay, so we've explored, you know, the complexities of Joseph's journey, the surprising twists in Judah's story, and this overall theme of God working through a flawed family to accomplish his purposes. But what about the other brothers, the lecture? Just mention them briefly, but I'm curious to know more about their individual stories and how they contribute to the larger tapestry.
And that's where things get even more interesting, because we know from the biblical account that the brothers, they eventually reunite with Joseph in Egypt, and there's this really powerful scene of forgiveness and reconciliation, and it's a pivotal moment, I think, because it sets the stage for the formation of the 12 tribes of Israel.
So even from that initial act of betrayal, God brings about a greater purpose, the birth of a nation.
Yeah,
it's a stunning example of how he can take our brokenness and use it for good. But I'm still curious about those other brothers. Like, what are their individual stories? What unique qualities do they bring to the table?
That's a great question. And while the lecture excerpts didn't go into detail about each brother, their individual personalities and journeys are certainly worth exploring. After all, they each contribute to the rich tapestry of Israel's history and to the fulfillment of God's promises.
I'm already sensing another cliffhanger.
A little bit, yeah.
I guess we'll have to wait for part three to delve into the individual stories of those other brothers and to discover what lessons their lives might hold for us today. Wow, I mean, we've been on quite a journey. You know, prophetic blessings, family drama, and the totally unexpected rise of Joseph. But I guess I'm wondering, what does this ancient story have to do with us, like here and now?
That's the million-dollar question, right? You know, these aren't just these captivating tales from way back when. They offer these really profound insights into the human condition, into the way that God works, and how our lives, almost like threads in a tapestry, connect to something much, much larger.
Okay, so let's get a little personal here for a second. I mean, what threads from this tapestry, you know, Jacob, Joseph, those 12 brothers, like what really resonates with our own experiences?
Well, I think, you know, first and foremost, the power of family, you know, for all its dysfunction and drama, this story, it highlights those really intricate bonds that tie us together, you know, for better or for worse. We see the sibling rivalry, the parental favoritism, the echoes of past hurts. You know, it's messy, it's real, and it's relatable, even thousands of years later.
It's like holding up a mirror to our own families,
not
right?
Sincerely.
I mean, we may not be selling each other into slavery these days,
right,
but we've all got our own versions of these same challenges.
Absolutely. And that's where I think the hope comes in, because even amidst all this mess, you know, God is at work. He's weaving a tapestry of redemption, using even those broken threads, those flawed choices to bring about his purposes.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, you know, how God might be using our family dynamics, our own messy relationships to accomplish something greater. Maybe those challenges are actually, you know, opportunities for growth, for forgiveness, for practicing grace,
yeah,
in ways we never even thought possible.
I love that. That's a beautiful way to look at it, I think. You know, it's not about having the perfect family. It's about allowing God to work through those imperfections.
Okay, now thinking beyond the family dynamics, yeah. I mean, Joseph's story, it stands out, you know, incredible adversity. We're talking betrayal, injustice, imprisonment, and yet he maintains his faith, his integrity. He doesn't become bitter or let those circumstances just crush his spirit. What a powerful example.
You know, what fascinates me is how Joseph doesn't just endure his trials. He actively seeks to understand God's purpose, you know, mm-hmm. within them. He interprets dreams. He makes these wise decisions. And even in prison, you know, he rises to a position of authority because of his character.
It's like he's not just sitting around waiting to be rescued.
Yeah.
He's actively participating in his own redemption, trusting that God is working even when things seem really bleak.
That's right. And in doing so, you know, he becomes an instrument of God's provision, not just for his own family, but for an entire nation. It's a reminder, I think, that even when we face setbacks, God can use our faithfulness in these really unexpected ways.
Man, this deep dive has been full of aha moments. But the theme that keeps coming back to me is God's providence.
Yeah.
You know, it's like this hidden thread that's running through the entire story, you know, connecting events, shaping them into this grand narrative.
Yeah. And that's what makes it so compelling, right? We see God orchestrating events even when his hand seems hidden. He's working behind the scenes, turning what appears to be tragedy into triumph, weaving a story of redemption that spans generations.
Yeah, it's almost like this cosmic puzzle.
Yeah.
You know, with each piece, each individual, each decision playing a role in the bigger picture.
And that, I think, brings a sense of comfort and hope because we may not always understand why things happen the way they do.
Right.
But we can trust that God is in control. He's using all things, even the difficult and the painful, to work out his perfect plan.
So as we wrap up our deep dive into Jacob's blessings and the rise of Joseph, what's the one thing you hope our listener takes away from all of this?
I think for me, it's the reminder that God's story is still being written, and we're all a part of it. Just like those ancient patriarchs, our lives, our choices, our relationships, they matter. We have a part to play in this grand narrative of redemption, and even our imperfections can be used by God for his glory.
The powerful thought that each of us has this unique role to play in God's unfolding plan. You know, this deep dive may have focused on a specific story, but it's also, I think, sparked some questions about your story. What
yeah.
threads is God weaving in your life? What twists and turns is he using to shape you, to refine you, to draw you closer to him? Those are questions I think worth pondering as you continue your own journey of faith.